Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased to be joined as always by my co-host, Paul Shields, for this Wednesday, June 14th, 2023. And Paul, let's jump right into it. Start off with the Stanley Cup Final. As you and I were talking about on Monday, we had a feeling that the Vegas Golden Knights were going to put away the Florida Panthers last night and claim their first Stanley Cup in franchise history and become the quickest franchise in the expansion era, I believe, to win a Stanley Cup in only your sixth year in existence, seventh year since they made the announcement last week, I believe it was. Now, obviously, we found out after the game that the reason they were without Matthew Tkachuk last night was due to a torn sternum that he sustained earlier on in the series, which obviously didn't help matters at all for the Florida Panthers. But also, as we discussed on Monday's edition of the Isolation Series, we talked about how the Florida Panthers really ran out of steam and the clock struck 12 on them. But you can't take anything away from what they did to make their way to the Stanley Cup Final. So what were your thoughts on last night's game? Because it was not close at all. And overall, the result of the Golden Knights lifting Lord Stanley's cup.
Well, I mean, obviously, congratulations to the Golden Knights. And it was a bold thing to say when, you know, Bill Foley, the owner, on the day the team was announced, said that they would make the playoffs in 3 years and win a cup in six. And he was bang on. So kudos to them. I thought, you know, they were the better team. And it sounds like a simplistic way to say it, but I think if you look at the Florida Panthers, they made a habit of eating up better teams all throughout the playoffs, right? They did a really good job of just staying in the fight long enough to let their clutch players be clutch, right? Bobrovsky was making huge saves. Tkachuk was unbelievably clutch in these playoffs, turned himself into a superstar. The unfortunate reality is that, you know, broken or fractured sternum, that the fact that he even put on gear for game four is unbelievable. I've never fractured a sternum, but I've had, you know, broken ribs before, and I've had issues with, you know, the muscles around the collarbone. And, you know, as a regular human, just getting up every day was challenging. Never mind being hit by, you know, 200-pound NHL players, you know, shift after shift. So all the credit in the world to the Florida Panthers for the effort that they put in. But Vegas was just too much to handle. They're big. They're fast. They got a great goaltending performance when they needed it. And the guys that were there, their leaders led the way. You know, Mark Stone gets that hat trick in the final game. Marchessault ends up with the Conn Smythe Trophy. Jack Eichel gets another handful of points in the final game. And all the guys that have been there sort of since day one contributed to what was a historic Stanley Cup run, right? The quickest expansion team ever to win a Stanley Cup. And the first time, a professional trophy goes to a professional sport, a Big Four sport trophy goes to a team in Vegas. So I just wonder how quickly this accelerates any plans, you know, Major League Baseball or the NBA have of going to Vegas, just seeing the success there of the Golden Knights now having a championship there, seeing the reception for the Raiders. I just think that Vegas is quickly becoming a North American professional sports town, which is exciting.
Yes, and they definitely know how to do it right and bring all the spectacle and the right amount of spectacle to their pregame stuff, especially for the playoffs. Last night, they had 50 Cent there to get the crowd going and do that crank horn or whatever you call it at the beginning of the game. And, you know, just the pageantry really is put in nicely by the people that put everything together for a Vegas team.
Yeah, I just think, like, the NHL can be a little bit stuffy, right? And I think that there's, you and I have talked on the show about how the league, it almost, it just doesn't do the marketing, it doesn't do the work that some of the other leagues do. Like, I look oftentimes at the NBA as a direct comparable, and just the leaps and bounds ahead that the NBA is on marketing their stars and marketing their game. And then this team in Vegas shows up with all the glitz and all the glamour of Las Vegas, exactly what you would expect from a professional sports team in Las Vegas. Heck, even the jerseys that they won the Stanley Cup in last night were sparkly gold. You know, like everything from the pregame, from the in-game entertainment, from the way that they celebrate, from the way the teams presented themselves, and quite frankly, the way they've built an entertaining hockey team year over year to compete consistently, it's hard to be mad about it. You know, and I understand that, you know, there was lots of cap shenanigans. It cost them a playoff spot last year. You know, they're the team that'll finish the year with the highest salary cap and however many million over the cap they were. But they've done what they've done within the rules of the game. They haven't done anything illegal based on the rules that are in the NHL. And they've just done it with so much flair and so much excitement. It's great. It's been great to see. And, you know, while I absolutely wish that it was my team, I wasn't unhappy to see Vegas win yesterday.
It reminded me very similarly, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but it reminded me very similarly of a couple of years ago with Tampa on their way to their back-to-back cup win before making it to three straight Stanley Cups. And that is for the majority of that year, they were without Nikita Kucherov, one of their stars, and really massaged the system to be able to get players in, and they had to deal with that. So it's kind of similar to what Vegas is going to have to deal with now in this offseason. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think were they over the cap? Absolutely. But again, this same as that team in Tampa, they didn't do anything that's against the rules. So I understand how people can get fired up. I understand how people can be annoyed or mad or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, they did things within the guidelines of the rules of the NHL, with the CBA and all of this stuff. So, and I mean, like anyone that's questioning whether, you know, Mark Stone, for example, was hurt, like the guy had a major back surgery. The fact that he's even able to skate and made it possible for him to play this year was like outrageous. The fact that he was able to actually do that. Max Pacioretty, who they traded for in the offseason to try and bolster their goal scoring, didn't play a single game in Carolina. Right, Carolina got him to bull. I shouldn't say that. I think he played one game this year. Like, these injuries that these guys deal with are serious, but I can understand how it might look to a fan on the outside going, like, hang on a second, how can Mark Stone possibly play now? There's something about the mentality of professional athletes, and we see it a lot in hockey players, where if they are able to stand and move, they want to play. look at Matthew Tkachuk. That's all you need to know. He was willing to have like his teammates dress him in his hockey gear, help him stand and walk just so that he could do everything he could to try and help that team win in game four. He knew how important it was. And with a cracked or fractured sternum, he wanted to try. So again, like, I get it. I get that people get mad about how over the cap certain things are, but our teams are, and this and that. It's a big conversation. I'm sure it'll continue to be a conversation. But make no doubt, Mark Stone worked his ass off to get in those playoffs. And I'm guessing that everyday playing hurt like hell.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, right? For NHL players, they're maniacs, man. What can you say?
Yeah. And they talk about it with Matthew Tkachuk getting off the bus even yesterday. The fact that he could barely move. And you know, so hats off to him. And to your point, even further, I think it was the first round, if I'm not mistaken, of this year's playoffs, where that Winnipeg individual got either a skate in the eye or a puck in the eye and then went off the ice and got something like 37 stitches in his face and came back with a shield and everything like that and continued to play. I'm sure you remember who I'm talking about. His name escapes me right now. But
yeah, you're talking about this season, early in this playoffs, you mean?
Correct.
Yeah, you're thinking of Morgan Barron, and I think it was closer to 70 stitches. It was a skate that came up and just missed his eye. He goes off for however long it takes to put in, you know, 50-plus stitches, comes back with a cage on and plays the rest of the game. Like, this is the mentality of hockey players, and this is the way that it – and when it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's the most important time of year for these players. So, guys, every single team and every single player plays through something, right? Some are more severe, some are less severe. But, you know, you look at what the Panthers needed to do to get to the finals, there's guys hurting there. You look at what the Vegas Golden Knights did to win the championship and the Stanley Cup final. There's guys hurting there. So I don't get too fired up about the, oh my God, this team was X number of dollars over the cap. Everybody does that. And as long as they're not doing anything against the rules, you know, teams that are able to take advantage of it should. I think it makes the game more fun. There's nobody that can tell me that, you know, you don't want to see the highest paid players playing at this time of year. Right. And you know, it makes the game better. It makes it more exciting and it's the playoffs. So yeah, as much as I understand the frustration, personally, I don't care. And congratulations to the Golden Knights.
And Paul, don't look now, but former Toronto Maple Leaf Phil Kessel has yet another Stanley Cup. So that makes three Stanley Cups for Phil Kessel, who garnered a lot of ire from the Toronto fan base for the majority of time that he was here. And some of it warranted and a lot of it not warranted. But for whatever you want to say about Phil Kessel, he's in an elite company now with three Stanley Cups.
You will not hear me say a bad word about Phil Kessel. I was a fan when he came to Toronto. I was sad to see him go, but understood that the team was moving in a direction where they needed more prospects, picks, and capital. And they were parting with you know, talented older players. I am so happy to see him as a three-time Stanley Cup champion, because what all he did when he came to Toronto was exactly what they paid him to do, which was score 30 or more goals every year. And that's what he did. And he unfortunately for him, he came at a time when the people in charge of the Toronto Maple Leafs overvalued and overestimated the skill and the makeup of that team. So I don't have it in my heart to blame Phil Kessel for that. He was a favorite when he was here as a younger person. And when I saw him, when I first saw the candy cane tape job that he did on his stick, I of course tried it out, you know, so I don't have any hate for Phil Kessel. I love the fact that he's got three Stanley Cups. I wish he could have played a little bit more for Vegas, but Vegas was just so deep and the team was so good and they were on such a roll. I understand why he unfortunately found himself on the outside looking in.
right? But a cup is still a cup, no matter which.
Cup is still a cup. Absolutely. And I think that every, you know, this it's a unique situation. Like the Vegas Golden Knights did this very differently, had going through five goalies that played for them this year. And I would say at least four of them deserve their names on the Stanley Cup, right? Like Logan Thompson went down by injury, but played very well for them. Laurent Bossoit, down by injury, played very well for them, played playoff games for them. Aiden Hill becomes the Stanley Cup star because he manages to, you know, backstop them in the conference final and the Stanley Cup final. Unbelievable play there with a 930 something save percentage, or maybe slightly less than that. And then Jonathan Quick, who they brought in because they were so concerned about the goaltending situation, backed up every game after the Bressois injury, and you know, provided a provides a veteran leader. That's a third Stanley Cup for him as well. So there's four goalies on that team who are probably going to get their name on the cup. They all deserve it. Phil Kessel deserves to have his name on there. He was a part of this team. He set the Iron Man streak in the regular season for games played in a row. Like there's some cool stories on this team. And I just think that it's fascinating. It's a different way to do it, but a Stanley Cup is a Stanley Cup, and you're part of that team. You deserve to call yourself a champion.
Yeah, ask Steve Shutt about that, because I believe he won something like five or six Stanley Cups, but that's neither here nor there. now, do you believe that Phil Kessel will look at retiring from the NHL now based on the fact that he won a third Stanley Cup and he is getting a little old now as far as a hockey player is concerned?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, right? He's done a lot of what there is to do in the NHL. Third Stanley Cup would be a good way to go out. I saw him, you know, celebrating with his family last night. That could be a pretty good send-off, a good way to ride off into the sunset. But I also don't know, you know, he still can be an effective player for teams that need some scoring depth, right? He's still quick. He's still a fast skater in this league. He's always been a quick player. He's not the most physical, so you know you're not going to get that out of him. But I would say that if he wants to play, there's probably a spot for him in the NHL next year. I think it's going to be totally up to him.
Does he come back to Toronto?
No chance. And only because I don't think that is the direction that Toronto wants to go in with their bottom six. I would guess, just from, you know, the things that I've seen out of Brad Treliving as a GM in this league, he's going to look for speed and size in their bottom six. That is my guess. And while Phil would be quicker, I think that, you know, he's one of two guys on the Vegas Golden Knights who are under 6 feet tall. And not to say that that's everything, not to say that, you know, you have to have players that are 6 feet plus. I just think that Treliving will search those pools first before he goes down. I think that if the Leafs are going to get veteran players on team friendly contracts, they're going to be looking for specific roles, like they did with Spezza for a couple of years, like they did with Giordano, who's coming back next year. Wayne Simmons. I think they'll be looking for that type of player to fill a very specific role. And I think Kessel on the Toronto Maple Leafs might be a little miscast.
Right. Only time will tell, but just to put a bow on the NHL conversation for today's episode, I want to get your thoughts on something that happened last week and we have not addressed it as of yet, and that is Brad Treliving made his first hire as the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he brought in a former Arizona Coyotes captain and one of the most respected senior people on an NHL roster for a long, long time in Shane Doan. Shane Doan has known Austin Matthews for a long, long time. They've skated together in Arizona for years and years and years, since I believe he was 12 or 13 years old. So do you believe that this move was done more to help massage the inevitable contract negotiations coming up with Austin Matthews, or was it done for another reason, in your opinion?
No, I don't. In the same way, I don't think that the Kyle Dubas staying or leaving affects what Austin Matthews wants to do in the long term. I don't think that Shane Doan impacts the way that he signs this next contract. I don't think it hurts, right? And I don't think that it's a negative. I think it's a huge positive. But I think that Shane Doan coming to the Toronto Maple Leafs is more about Bradshaw leaving, bringing in guys that he knows and trusts. They have a long-time relationship from back when Treliving was working with the Coyotes. And I just don't see, I don't see any player who basically has to treat themselves like a brand, and this is their job, right? This is their livelihood. I don't see, you know, bringing in a player's favorite childhood player as a tactic to massage negotiations. I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of business done that way, if I'm being perfectly honest. So I think it's more about what Shane Doan couldn't get from Phoenix, which was a more hands-on role in the hockey operation. And then him having an opportunity with a GM that he knows and trusts in Brad Treliving. The fact that he has a relationship with Matthews, the fact that he has a relationship with Matthew Nyes, these are overwhelming positives. Right, they are 1,000% good things, but I don't think that they impact whether a guy like Austin Matthews signs a contract or wants to stay in Toronto. I think that decision comes with, you know, what can Matthews get for as far as a contract and the money that he wants to get, and where's the team going, right? Is the team committed to winning and getting over the hump and you know, committing to being a Stanley Cup contender every single year? That, I think, is way more important than, you know, negotiating with your friend or your mentor or whatever.
We talked about Jason Spezza just a moment ago, and it was announced earlier today, not surprisingly, in my opinion, that Jason Spezza is reuniting with Kyle Dubas in Pittsburgh. He was officially announced today as Kyle's assistant general manager, which I thought was an interesting move. We know that he ended his career last year and then went right into the management office this year as a special assistant. Are you surprised at all? Not that he reunited with Dubas, because they have a strong relationship, clearly, but that a guy who, yes, had a great playing career but hasn't really had that much time in management is already getting a big role as an assistant general manager in the NHL.
I don't think it was a surprising move. I think that, you know, Dubas and Spezza obviously have a relationship that that's deep enough and strong enough that when Dubas was let go from the Leafs, you know, Spezza handed his resignation in not that long after. So not super surprising. Again, I think he goes from being the assistant to the general manager to being an assistant general manager, which sounds funny, but there is a distinction there. It means that he'll be more involved in the day-to-day hockey decision-making when it comes to roster movement, when it comes to players that they may want to sign, draft, trade, et cetera, like all of that stuff. So while he was involved here in Toronto, he gets that sort of next layer of involvement. And much like Treliving, you know, bringing a guy like Shane Doan with him to Toronto, Dubas bringing a guy like Spezza makes a lot of sense. He's a good hockey guy. He's a hockey addict by all accounts. He just loves the game and loves watching it and is very astute in his assessment of the game. So I wish them both the best. I have a lot of time for Kyle Dubas and I have a lot of time for Jason Spezza. I thought the years he played here for Toronto were, he was very effective. And the fact that he wanted to come home, play on a short team friendly contract, it was a joy to watch him play for the Leafs after watching him, you know, decimate the Leafs as a Senator for so long. So I have a lot of time for Spezza. I have a lot of time for Dubas. I won't cheer against Pittsburgh unless, of course, they're playing Toronto. And then we all know where my heart lies.
What are your thoughts on the NBA champion Denver Nuggets? Denver was able to close out their series against the Miami Heat in a highly contested game on Monday night. Again, you and I both said here on the program on Monday that we thought that Denver was going to close it out and we should have treated it like a game seven, and they did. It was very, very close at the end, and they ended up winning, I believe, by 5 points, if memory serves, to bring the first championship in franchise history to the Denver Nuggets, and for the second year in a row, the city of Denver, Colorado, is celebrating a champion. Last year, it was the Colorado Avalanche. This year, it is the Denver Nuggets. And it's solidified, as we talked about on Monday as well, that Nikola Jokic is arguably the greatest player in the NBA going right now. Now, that can change on a week-to-week basis, depending on what Giannis Antetokounmpo does, or Joel Embiid, or another handful of individuals. But right now, he solidified himself as the number one player in the world, especially for what he did all throughout these playoffs. And big, big shout out to Kitchener's own Jamal Murray, who had a great playoff himself and is bringing the Larry O'B back to Kitchener.
Yeah, I mean, again, and it, you know, it sounds a little bit like a repeat, but Denver was the better team. Right. And Miami was on an absolutely incredible run. They, you know, the first play-in team to ever make the finals since they instituted the play-in. Jimmy Butler playing out of his shoes, you know, but then they come up against a team like Denver and they were just not messing around. Right. Like, you know, Jokic and Murray really showed the power of that duo. And yeah, that, you know, well, there were some tense moments in that final game. I don't think there was a whole lot of doubt. And then, I mean, Denver played exceptionally well and good on them. And I thought Jokic's post-game press conference was just hilarious. Just a guy that looked like he'd given everything he possibly had and just wanted to go home to watch some horse racing. Being disappointed he had to stick around for the parade until a Thursday. I just got a good laugh out of it. I think he did a really genuine interview. And it's sometimes refreshing to see after what we become accustomed to with North American sports being pretty cookie cutter, pretty unemotive. I thought he was very funny and great to see Murray win a championship. So cool. Such a good player, and you know, to battle back from the injuries and play as well as he played this season and these playoffs was pretty exceptional.
Yeah. I didn't see his interview after the game, admittedly. Did he say flat out that he just wanted to go home and watch Mortis Racing?
Yeah, something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing, but he basically asked when the parade was, and they told him it was Thursday, and he sort of rolled his eyes like, I have to go home. And they said, you'll go home Friday. And then he capitulated, sort of like, okay, that's fine. Right. It was just very funny. It was a very like real moment for a guy that honest to goodness, just looked like he had the longest day at work. You know, it kind of gave it that everyman vibe of like his boss showed up at 4:55 with a stack of papers and said, hey, I need you to do these before you go home. He got them done. And now he's looking forward to going home. It was very funny.
You know, he reminds me of a little bit Nikolai Volkov.
That's funny. Yeah, I could see that.
Yes. I would be remiss if I did not end today's episode with a couple of news and notes from Major League Baseball. We saw last night that Chris Bassitt, for the first time seemingly in a month, got shelled pretty early in his outing against Baltimore, only going 4 2/3 innings, I believe it was. And the Blue Jays were down 8-1 very early on, and they were able to make it respectable. In the end, they lost 11-6. Again, you know, it's the up and down part of the season for the Blue Jays, because this is how it's been for them seemingly all year. But, you know, a lot of times we say it's early, Well, it's not early anymore in terms of the fact that we are reaching the midpoint of June, and we are now 2.5 weeks away from the All-Star break. So what are your thoughts on the continual up and down point of the Blue Jays and the fact that they had to use Bowden Francis last night to eat up a lot of innings that they didn't anticipate? And so because of this, do you believe that they are going to move Kevin Gausman up to regular rest due to the off day that they had on Monday and put him on Friday instead of Saturday, so that they only have one bullpen game coming up over the next month or so, and that'll be on Saturday, which will give Bowden Francis an extra day to get himself ready to potentially be an opener again.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that as a possibility. The struggles for the Blue Jays seem to sort of compound on them, and you know, guys like Gausman and Bassett, who have been so good for them, are going to have bad days, and unfortunately, they couldn't help them. This time around, I know in the Gausman start they ended up coming back, but that Bassett one, they just didn't have the magic there to do that. So I think the less you have to deal with the opener, the better, right? The less you have to kind of go to that until they come up with a solution for the spot vacated by Alek Manoah. So yeah, that would make sense to me. And I would think that that's the direction they would lean in, but there's been some interesting, if not questionable, decisions made, particularly with pitchers this year. So I'll be interested to see what they decide to do.
Okay. And then once again, last night we saw the umpires front and center in New York in the first game of the Subway Series in interleague play between the Yankees and the Mets. As one of the Mets relievers came in and during the warm-up tosses got thrown out for a foreign substance check. And so that's an automatic 10-game suspension, as we know, and we've seen this now three or four times, and this is the second time that it's happened specifically with the New York Mets in the last 6 weeks or so, because we know that Max Scherzer was suspended for 10 games not that long ago as well. What do you make of this stuff seeming to rear its ugly head at least once or twice a month these days? Because, yeah, it's a new situation and everything like that, and the rules and the pitch clock and all this stuff. And we know that the hand check has been in for a couple of years now, and yet it still seems to be an issue. Why do you think that is? Because all teams know exactly what the protocols are between the innings and when new pitchers come in now.
Well, I just think that professional athletes are going to do everything and try and get every advantage to win. So I don't know that any of these guys deliberately go out thinking that they're trying to necessarily quote unquote cheat. But I think that they're going to try and push the boundaries. They're going to try and use a little too much of whatever it is that they are using to, keep the grip on the ball. Right, it's a rosin, right? They're going to, push and push and push until they get called. And until you call guys regularly for the infractions, then they're going to keep happening. So, it's on the players to adjust. That's the rule. So I have no problem with it. Fine them, suspend them, whatever the rule is, like, stick to it. Because if you don't stick to it, guys are going to continue to get away with it. So the more consistent they can be and the more transparent they can be about what they're calling, when and why, I think that you are just going to slowly see it gone from the game and it will become less and less. That's my thought.
Right. And I just want to get your thoughts on something that is interesting. We know, or at least interesting in my opinion, and because my name is on the front of the show, here we go. The Oakland Athletics won their seventh straight game. We also know that a lot of their fans are boycotting or have been boycotting the team because they still need a new stadium in the worst way, and Oakland Coliseum is very old. And yet the Oakland team has, by all accounts, been very, very bad all year. And even with this 7-game win streak, they are only at 19-50, which by far, I believe, is the worst record in Major League Baseball right now. So we know that teams get streaky no matter what sport it is, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, whatever. But does this recent 7-game win streak do anything for the Oakland Athletics at all?
No, they're an absolute joke right now, and I feel for the fans there. You know, I like they're basically getting their team sort of taken away from them. They have the oldest park in the stadium with literally a rodent infestation in their press boxes, to make one of their press boxes completely unusable. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And if I were a fan of that team, I would be furious. I have no ill will towards the fans. And I'm sure the players are sick of it too. If that's what's happening in the press boxes, imagine what their clubhouse looks like. Like, it's an absolute disaster. And either, so you either sell the team and move them to Vegas, like has been rumored, or fix the friggin' ballpark. This is ridiculous. So good for the play. I feel good for the players to go out there and play with pride, and they're professional ball players, and they don't want this hanging around their neck all the time that they're the worst team in baseball, but it's not even close. So awesome. They could rattle off another 7 in a row. They could be 14, 15, 20 in a row. It will make no difference because they are the worst team in baseball because they are not getting the support and the resources they need from their management. It is absolutely embarrassing. Good for them for the 7-game win streak, but it doesn't mean anything.
We talk all the time about substandard living conditions. It's the epitome of that with the Oakland Athletics for the reasons that you just said. And the fact that, yes, they've been in the abyss for a long, long time and wavering on whether or not they're going to sell the team or whatever the case may be. Unfair to your players that show up every day still to play professional baseball to have to deal with those substandard conditions.
Yeah, like I said, it's foolish. It's embarrassing. And I don't know how baseball lets it happen. I don't have the magic words or the magic for that. But man, is it frustrating to watch.
Right, just because I always ask you this. Is there anything that we haven't covered today on this Wednesday, June 14th, 2023 edition of the Isolation Series that we should?
No, you know, Spence, I think that it was a great hockey season. I'll be sad that there's not NHL hockey to watch for the next few months, but I am excited. I think this offseason in the NHL is going to be really fascinating. I think there's going to be lots of hockey talk on the pod this summer because it just feels like between the trade market and what I would call a pretty thin free agent class this year, there is the stage is set for some excitement. So while the games are done and I'll look forward to new games come the fall, I am looking forward to this offseason because I think it's going to be I think there's going to be some real fireworks.
I agree with you 100%, and I honestly believe that for the NBA as well. The poised to do a lot of interesting things this offseason heading into their new season in the fall as well. I would also be remiss if I did not mention the fact, just selfishly, 1 month from today, you and your wife Laura, along with a few other individuals, will be down once again at Budweiser Stage to watch the From the Fire tour provided by Zach Brown Band and myself, as I'm gearing up to introduce them once again at Budweiser Stage. And to be honest with you, I cannot believe that we are already 1 month away from that yet again. So it's going to be one hell of an evening. And I hope people come out and enjoy the way that we did for two shows last year.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. They were great. It was a great time last year. So I'll be looking forward to it again this time around.
Especially with your Macho Man Randy Savage wraparound sunglasses.
You know, if the weather permits, that's what I'll be wearing.
Yes. But for Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation Series for Wednesday, June 14th, 2023, episode 287. As it were, we are marching slowly but surely to the historic episode 300, which will happen in the next couple of weeks, no doubt. And as always, we appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you are doing so. And we appreciate our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do, including WellbeingPerformance.com, the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute, GreenStorage.ca, and wonderful people at Imprint Pilates, as well as so many others. We appreciate you every single day. But until the next episode, We hope you guys enjoy the rest of your day, whatever it is that you choose to do. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @vspencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.